Hello, everyone, and welcome to Therapy in a Nutshell. I'm Emma McAdam, a licensed marriage and family therapist, and this is the podcast where I condense mental health skills into bite-sized nuggets of help. If coronavirus has taught us nothing else, it's taught us that we're all connected. I've learned that an illness that started half a world away can impact whether my kids get to play with other kids in the neighborhood or whether my husband has a job. But unfortunately, as the virus has taught us all that we're dependent on each other, it's also forced us to choose social distancing as a means of fighting it. And being away from social interaction has its side effects. In this episode, we're going to talk about how loneliness and isolation impact mental health, and also how loneliness impacts our immune system, our heart, and other aspects of physical health. And we're going to talk about a couple of ways to mitigate those effects and to stay as healthy as possible. I hope that for many of you, lockdown orders have lifted and things are getting a bit easier. But with social distancing measures, life is far from back to normal. And I think that most of us have really struggled with social distancing. Social isolation is hard on mental health. Research shows that loneliness contributes to depression, anxiety, lack of motivation, and it's just lonely and discouraging. But loneliness is also stressful on the body. Social isolation and loneliness is linked to a bunch of physical and mental conditions, like high blood pressure, heart disease, and a weakened immune system. It's also connected with cognitive decline and Alzheimer's. A large study by Julianne Holt-Lundstad found that a lack of social connection heightens health risks as much as smoking 15 cigarettes a day or having an alcohol addiction. Other studies have shown that loneliness and social isolation are as harmful to physical health as obesity and high blood pressure. Loneliness can cause inflammation in our immune system, which over time increases our risk of chronic diseases. And when people feel lonely, your immune system is weakened in a way that actually makes it harder to fight off viruses. One researcher called loneliness a fertilizer for other diseases. The biology of loneliness can accelerate the buildup of plaque in arteries. It can help cancer cells grow and spread, and it can promote inflammation in the brain, which leads to Alzheimer's disease. But despite the negative effects of loneliness, research has also shown that people are more lonely and isolated than ever. More than 3 out of 5 people report being lonely, and loneliness has risen 13% since 2018. And that data is from before the pandemic. It must be off the charts now. Our brain is wired for connection. One of my favorite researchers, Brené Brown, said, "A deep sense of love and belonging is an irresistible need of all people. We are biologically, cognitively, physically, and spiritually wired to love and to be loved and to belong. When those needs are not met, we don't function as we are meant to. We break, we fall apart, we numb, we ache, we hurt others, we get sick." The human brain is dependent on connection with others. When our ancestors were hunter-gatherers, we depended on people in our tribe or in our village for our survival, and rejection from that group often meant death. So our anciently evolved brain is invested in keeping us connected to other people for our survival. A huge part of our brain, the midbrain, houses the limbic system, which is responsible for emotions and relationships. Your brain is hardwired to connect to other human beings. Babies are born with instincts that help them attach to caregivers, and caregivers are hardwired to attach to babies. This shows up in instincts like a baby crying and my instinctual drive to soothe those cries. These instincts include things like rooting and nursing, reaching out and holding, cooing and gazing into each other's eyes. When a baby has a need like hunger, and the caregiver meets that need by feeding the baby develops what's called secure attachment. Babies who are raised in an orphanage and who are given all the proper physical care, like food and a warm crib and a comfortable environment, they actually face a life-threatening environment. And that's because loving physical touch and human connection are necessary for survival. Around one third of these babies in orphanages where they get little to no physical and emotional connection with a caregiver, one third of them just die. Without that connection to a caregiver, the body stops producing growth hormones and the immune system is weakened. And that lack of connection dramatically impacts brain development and emotional health. Our connections to other human beings creates a hardwired map in our brain about whether the world is safe, whether people are trustworthy, whether outcomes are predictable. And this is called attachment style. Secure attachment soothes and calms the deep parts of our brain. And babies aren't the only ones who need connection for their brains to function. Without secure attachment as children or adults, it's very difficult to regulate our emotions and to build strong relationships. In one study that I found really interesting, participants were put through this scenario where they were playing a computer game that simulated rejection. So they thought they were playing against these other characters who were rejecting them. Brain imaging showed that the brain perceived the rejection similar to the way that it perceives pain. When participants were asked to take Tylenol as part of the study, they experienced less pain upon rejection. So our brain interprets social isolation or rejection to be as threatening as physical pain or danger. So this is a biological fact. The human brain doesn't work well without connection. Now that we live in a global community, we often forget about that need for the village, for that connection that our ancestors used to have. Our modern society has a huge emphasis on individualism, and people are growing more and more isolated as time goes on. Research over the last decade has shown that people are becoming increasingly isolated and lonely. 25% of people in the United States say that they don't even have one close friend. Research has even shown that on average, people have less friends than they did 10 or 15 years ago. Now let's talk about the benefits of connection. Connection to others have been shown to increase longevity. It's been shown to strengthen our immune system and quicken healing. It's also been shown to decrease anxiety and depression and to improve self-esteem. When we connect to others, we release oxytocin, and this is known as the love hormone. It helps people attach and connect to each other. It's basically the neurochemical basis of the sense of safety and trust that allows people to become open to connection or even therapeutic change. Taking care of others has also been shown to release dopamine. That's the feel-good, the motivation, and the reward chemical in the brain. So one of the ways that we trigger both dopamine and oxytocin is through eye contact and hugs. Our brain really responds best to in-person interactions. 8-second hugs and eye contact are really necessary to soothe the brain and to release oxytocin and to create this sense of safety. Hugs can release dopamine, which can help with feelings of depression and loneliness. And hugs can fight stress. Receiving social support can help strengthen the immune system. One study by Carnegie Mellon found that people who hug more get sick less. And another one by Harvard showed that hugs can improve heart health. And a few weeks ago, my mom told me the story about one of her friends who had a severe case of COVID-19. He was on a ventilator for weeks. He was only 45 years old, but they thought he was going to die. And all this time that he's in the hospital, in the ICU, his family couldn't even be there. No one could touch him, hold him, sit with him, talk to him. And finally, after weeks of this, they finally allowed his wife in to sit next to him and to hold his hand. And she sat with him for 4 hours. And that was the day that he started to heal. He started to turn the corner and improve. So that physical touch, I believe, helped turn on his immune system so that he could heal. As we seek to treat this deadly pandemic, I hope we don't resort to the long-term isolation that in the long run is harmful, maybe even more harmful than the disease itself. But we can, in the midst of social distancing, all choose ways to seek connection in a way that's safe. So I encourage everyone out there to work hard to do that, both for our physical health and our mental health, and the health of our society as a whole. Family therapist Virginia Satir said, we need 4 hugs a day for survival, we need 8 hugs a day for maintenance, and we need 12 hugs a day for growth. So during this weird time of social distancing, hug your family members as much as possible. Cuddle with them while you're watching shows. Turn off your devices long enough to look them in the eyes and to play together. Use FaceTime and video chats instead of texting whenever possible. work less and connect more. As soon as it's safe, reach out to those who are lonely and help them feel connected. And even if you can't do that in person, find ways to do that over, you know, digital formats. Research shows that most adults have less and less friends as they enter their 30s. And it's time for us all to start investing time and energy into making close friendships. For some people, making friends comes naturally. But for a lot of people, they have to work hard to develop that skill. But I really believe that you can learn to make more friends. So I'm going to share with you a few ways that you can actively work to increase your friendships and your social connections. There are people out there who can benefit from your friendship. So I would say start by looking to your neighbors, your acquaintances, and your family members to deepen those relationships that you already have. Another thing you can do is you can access personal support through therapists and mental health professionals, and also through community activities and offerings. So I'm gonna talk about how you can strengthen these connections in general, because I know that social distancing isn't going to last forever, but I'm also gonna talk about how you can adapt these social connection ideas to this really strange and lonely time. So whenever possible, choose face-to-face interaction over scrolling on social media. So use FaceTime, or you could set up outdoor meetings to see each other's faces. You can keep your friendships alive through acts of kindness. You could drop off small gifts or bake some cookies or offer to pick something up from the store. You can organize like recipe sharing group or an online book club. Try to be active. You know, join a club or pick an activity. You could go to a meetup group, that is social distancing appropriate right now. But, you know, social distancing, like I said, is not always going to be around. But during social distancing, I've joined a book club, a Bible study group, and a business incubator program. And each of these are doing meetings using Zoom right now. So I'm still getting some interaction. You could also try community education. So you could take a class that you're interested in, like bowling or pottery. And even if you don't make new friends, you'll at least get some new skills. So even right now with social distancing, right now is a great time to learn something new. So you can do this in groups, even from your own homes. You can do a project together or do an online course, choose some kind of challenge to work on, and then get together to talk about what you're learning. Another great way to meet people is through service, getting involved in a good cause. So there are still a lot of ways to serve while maintaining social distance. The Smithsonian has digital volunteer opportunities, and the app Volunteer Match has opportunities all around the world. I've seen one where there are people who are blind and they take a picture with their smartphone, and then volunteers read to them what that label says or tells them what they're looking at. So that's an example of a digital way to serve that still, you know, includes social distancing. Another tip is that whenever possible, say yes. You know, you are probably used to getting asked to baby showers or wedding receptions or dinners or parties. And, you know, this might not be happening as much with coronavirus, but whenever you can, start saying yes instead of saying no. Okay, practice an outward mindset. Make other people feel like they matter to you. Ask them about themselves. You can almost always find someone to be a friend to. So focus on being a friend to others and reaching out to them. And with some work, you'll probably be able to find a mutually rewarding relationship. Just take the initiative. Look for opportunities to invite people deeper into your life. It doesn't matter how. It can be as simple as inviting people over for dessert, or a movie night, or planning an outing together. The important thing is just putting yourself out there. If you wait for the other person to initiate, they usually won't. Creating healthy connection is really essential for health, for connection, and growth. Our brain is wired for connection. And like I said before, loneliness is really detrimental for mental and physical health. But unfortunately, more people are more lonely than ever. So you can improve your mental health by actively working to improve your connections with other people and developing closer relationships with family members and friends. So I encourage you today to choose one way to improve your support network and to commit to working on that goal a little bit each week. If you'd like to, take some time to write down what your goal is down in the comments. I'd love to hear about it. Also, I have started a Patreon page. If you'd like to support this channel and more mental health content that's easily accessible, please just go check out the link in the description. You can start by just contributing a couple bucks a month, and that's going to help me produce more mental health content for hundreds of thousands of people. So thanks again. Take care. Have a good day. This podcast was adapted from a YouTube video from my YouTube channel, Therapy in a Nutshell. So if you'd like to see more of my videos, check that out and go subscribe on YouTube. Also, you can sign up for my newsletter at www.therapynutshell.com. Thank you for listening and take care.